Hey guys, Will here with a little pre-episode information dump for you guys. We had a little bit that we neglected to mention in the episode that I wanted to really make sure that folks had, and that is that Gen Con event signups are going to be going live on Sunday at noon. So be on the lookout, that's important, and they are going to go fast. Now, as well, I want to draw attention to the fact that there's still time to enter into our contest for the episode 250 live draft. Remember, you need to be available on Wednesday around 8 o'clock central for a live draft. And to enter, you will be emailing us at contact@whitebookpodcast.com or Facebook messaging us to the show. And you're going to give us the list of the top five cards that were first picked on average in our test drafts. Now, the other thing I want to draw my attention to is my audio in this episode, and I would like to apologize profusely. I actually purchased a new mic while on break that should have been pretty decent. Everything sounded great while recording locally and testing it in Audacity. And aside from the comment from my co-host this week that I was a little quiet at first, which we rectified with a little volume modification, my co-hosts noticed nothing unusual that they mentioned during their recording, or at least during the call. But when playing back the recording for editing of the episode this week, I noticed that my audio sounds, well, to put it bluntly, horrific. They all sound crystal clear, but mine is terribly artifacty and somewhat echoey. I'm having difficulty determining what might cause that to only show up in the recording of the call, but not local recordings or during the call to other listeners. If any of you listening to the podcast have some good ideas on that, I would love to know more because I would really like to conquer that particular issue. What is honor compared to a woman's love? What is duty against the feel of a newborn son in your arms? Or the memory of a brother's smiles? Wind and words, wind and words. We are only human, and the gods have fashioned us for loves. That is our great glory and our great tragedy. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we decided it was time to rebrand and relaunch just in time for the game to do the same with its second edition. Tune in each week for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. Be sure to check www.whitebookpodcast.com for more content, generally in written form. Huge thanks go out to George R.R. Martin for creating this world, FFG for a great game, all of our contributors, and you, the listeners. Contact us on this site, facebook.com, as well as Twitter, or email contact@whitebookpodcast.com. This Creative Commons music is Townfish by Spoons.
Hi, I'm Aaron.
I'm Roy.
I'm Tommy, introducing the newly married
Mr. Lentz.
Oh, fuck, I thought we were getting Kristen on.
That's what everybody wants.
We want the better Lentz. There we go, that's what we're all...
Oh, yeah, I'll go get her.
Nice, we're done with Will. We can say whatever we want. No one's editing.
Everyone loves Kristen. She's got a great laugh. She'll just laugh at everything we're saying. This is perfect.
And we'll get cookies at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. You only get the cookies if you attend.
Which I am. Oh, yeah. Cookies for me.
She's going to be going baking crazy.
Every time I've ever seen Kristen, I've been handed a bag of cookies. So I think you're wrong.
You know, I think I've really figured out her scheme. She just bribes everyone in the Thrones community. So I think I just need to figure out something. Cookies, obviously, aren't going to work.
I've got a way you can bribe the community.
Okay, go on.
Let her be on the podcast instead of you.
Ouch. And so, for everyone's clarity, cookies are not a euphemism in this instance.
Oh, no, they're actually right. Cookies.
No,
yes, they're real cookies, and they are really good.
Her cookies are so good, I didn't even make that connection.
Yeah, just don't think about your health.
Blinded by baking.
They are full of butter.
Yeah, but like, oh, Roy, you can't eat the cookie.
I know. It's tragic.
Well, we can probably find this. We can make some with coconut oil instead. I've been using that for dang near everything for the last couple months anyway.
There we go. So vegan cookies are actually remarkably easy to make, but that's not here nor there.
Where is it?
He's making no-bakes somewhere soon, so no-bakes.
They should.
Chocolate, peanut butter, it's basic.
All right, guys. Yeah. Welcome to your cookie baking podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good way to kick this off again.
Considering how dark it was the first time, we're doing much better.
Yes, we are.
Really turn this thing around.
Woo! Cookies do it. Will getting married does it as well.
Yeah.
Oh, so how many 2C/1C/ white book hosts were at your wedding, Will?
Everyone but us.
Yeah.
Yeah, nearly. Yeah, let's see what. Okay, past hosts, of course, Brett and Daryl. Greg was there. Tommy was there. Kyle was there. Kristen was there. She's been up.
That's every 2C/1C host, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Except me. And you. Oh, wait, you were there. I hate you.
Oh, Justin Fox used to be on 2C pretty regularly. I'd say once.
And was hilarious when he was on there.
Yeah,
he was.
So there's eight of us.
I would have been there if I didn't just have a baby. I actually feel really bad. I super wish I was there.
You have no.
It was a good time.
Well, I wanted to, like, I fully planned to go, and then Carla was like, "You know, that's right after the baby's born, right?" And I was like, "Oh, well, yeah."
I think that's a good reason. So I used to have some quality time.
It is a good reason to not go.
Your own child. Yeah.
You just resent him forever. Just be like, I couldn't go to Will's wedding, Noah.
Yeah.
Just
no cookies just, for you. You are no never allowed to eat cookies in your life.
You just get to eat.
Yeah.
Dropping the band hammer on the cookies.
Okay. Well, should we ever talk about Thrones? I like that was almost segueing into it with the host business, but we didn't quite, you know, fully make it there.
I'm trying, Will. I'm trying.
Yeah.
So wait, what's this podcast about? All I've been doing is talking shit for weeks while you've been gone. Will.
Yeah, it's got to be hard to get back into the space of actually providing.
I mean, we should probably talk about Thrones.
We definitely should.
I like that a lot.
So Lannister, the best house, right?
So let's talk shop, boys. We've been gone for quite a while, and we've made it through a solid chunk of regional, I might say, season. Gosh, this Sam Adams is doing a number on me already.
Wait. We've been gone quite a while?
Well, yeah, you guys weren't on the White Book either.
Sure I am. I've had like 7 articles on the White Book podcast.
Hey, I've posted twice while I was gone on break. Once about the updates coming to the website. Listeners, be watching for those. We've still got more to come. Though you'll see some smaller ones like the redone menus. And I posted 2 spoiler images.
Yeah, you provided good content. I just sort of talk shit.
Well, seems normal.
I passed along cons. Give a G. I didn't car thing.
Look. I did public service to the community. I got Joe from Cincinnati to play another deck.
Hey, there you go.
We recorded 3 very enjoyable episodes of The Second Son.
I mean, we had like half an episode of enjoyable content in that.
What did you get Joe to try out?
A Stark Fealty with Direwolves.
Oh, fun. That's a fun deck.
Mm-hmm. Still staying up north, but diversifying. I like it.
Yeah, it fit everything he wanted in an alternate deck. So he's going to take it for a spin on his YouTube channel. And then we're going to do another article.
Awesome.
Cool. In 3 articles, Joe will be playing Lannister. That's how this will work.
That's exactly how this is working.
But
for the record, we didn't write that article. We had a conversation, and then I sent the conversation to Luke, and Luke made that an article. He was like, "What are you doing to my life?" I was like, "Whatever. You decided to be editor, Luke. You suffer."
Well, speaking of Luke and his editings, hey, if any of you listeners out there have been playing in some of these tournaments and you've done well, say one or placed in the cut, be firing decks over to you. Things have been kind of dry. Aaron, I thought, didn't you get a whole bunch of metas to agree to pact about posting stuff?
So in that conversation was the caveat that if you're getting ready for a major tournament, you can wait till the end of that season to share the decks. Because, like, if you're going to if you say play, oh, I don't know, like Patrick Lannister Dragon and win a tournament in, say, I don't know, New York, then. Then, like, what if you want to play that in, I don't know, just to pick a place, Wausau in the coming week? You don't really want to post that immediately before. Or if one of your friends wants to play that in maybe Rochester. Like, these are decks you don't really want public.
But, I mean, you said Lannister Dragon. That's just the deck that we built on the wipe, right?
Yeah. It's already up. That. You remember how angry I was at that deck? It's definitely not that deck.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of cards come out between now and then.
And one that is really good one.
So how are things looking from what we know, guys?
Lannister started off really dominating, and there was a backlash. And people were like, hey, you know what's good against Lannister? Martell and Baratheon. So Martell and Baratheon are seeing more play. And Targ seems to have dried up a fair amount.
You know, the interesting
thing... Well, as a main
thing,
house, Aaron.
If you're looking at, like, aggregate stats, Lannister was so far in the lead that it's still at a larger-than-proportionate chunk.
It's always going to be larger-than-proportionate. It's still the best house. It's just people are now, after us yelling at them for a while, people are finally looking for counters instead of just playing Lannister again.
People are still going to play Lannister, though, because people like to have economy provided for them.
I don't know if gold is good. Like, I hear you should just not play with any gold.
I don't know who you're hearing that from. Are you talking to Reams?
I don't think he speaks for the White Book podcast at all.
I mean, I think everyone but me should play no gold at Gen Con. Just not.
Well, Aaron is, yes, Aaron says you should play one of those mini curve decks, you know, low gold plots.
And you should run your own first snow when you do that.
Yes. I think more seriously, though.
It might be okay.
What might be okay?
I said as long as that's Martell, it might be okay.
Oh, still, I think Martell, based on what our...
But
based on what our English friends spoiled last week, I think Martell is going to be wanting gold soon, pretty badly.
Yep, that's a fair point.
Yeah.
I mean, the big problem, right, is it's not really a problem because it's what we all wanted. You know, I remember when I first came 1.0, all we did was complain about chapter pack release schedules. But FFG has given us so many cards during the end of the store championship season into the early regional season that the meta has not really been stable. You can even see this, as Aaron said, like one of the, like before the last chapter pack with Miri in it, you know, that Lanny Kraken build that the Brotherhood guys came up with was easily the best, along with the jumper deck, one of the two best decks in the meta. And, you know, Miri changed that. And sort of has shifted the meta in a different way that people are still accommodating. And we're going to get before the next regional I'm playing in on the 21st, we're going to get another set of cards that's going to shake up the meta. So it's really hard to hammer out like what is the best deck of the regional season. Unlike last year,
not true. The best deck of the regional season thus far has been Lanny Kraken. Is it still the best? No. We showed up at tournaments with decks and they were all better. So, but like it was the best deck of the regional season thus far.
Right.
I mean,
until
we can still make some generals. People are still going to be playing.
They should be. It's a really good deck.
Yeah, Lanny Kraken's a great deck. And so is, like, look, Lannister in general. Lannister Lannister most banners is a very solid deck. Lannister remains, I think, the best. If you're just looking for a solid faction to play in your upcoming regional, you should play Lannister. If you're not,
and it is a quarter of the field, basically, right now, as an average.
Yeah, it's also still got a way above average qualification rate, too. So even given how much it's played, it's still overrepresenting in the cut. Like, Lannister has to be what's on your mind, but it doesn't have to be what you play.
Right, it doesn't have to be.
Well, no, but, like, assuming you want to do well and you want to win, it doesn't have to be what you play. Like,
correct.
Martell and Baratheon are right there. And Targ should be, but everyone decided to cut Dany and just play Miri.
I think Targ's there. I mean, I think this is actually getting to the meatier part of the episode faster than I was expecting, where I wanted to kind of talk some and build a deck to kind of prep for that kind of contingency, kind of keep Lannister in mind, like you were saying. And Targ was going to be my suggestion for that.
Tommy and I went elsewhere. If you wanted a Targ, you're not allowed to say Targ Lion.
Oh, no, I was not going to say it. I was going to ask for some suggestions and thoughts. I'm not 100% beholden to Targaryen at the main house. That was just going to be my suggestion.
Stark Lannister.
Well, Stark into Lannister or Lannister into Stark?
Stark into Lion.
Hmm. Interesting.
I mean, throwing CB is down, so I don't know how we're building it.
Although, before we get to deck building, though, I think one of the more interesting things, though, that I think the regional season meta has shown us is that every faction, except for Night's Watch,
and
Tyrell to a lesser extent, but I think Tyrell
is worse than Night's Watch, yes.
You think that Tyrell is worse than Night's Watch? Okay, well, let's talk about this then. Why is Tyrell worse than Night's Watch? But let me get to my initial point,
which is that six factions of the eight
have a build that can take a tournament, which I think is a good, healthy meta. Like, Stark can win a tournament, Martell can win a tournament, Barrett can win a tournament, Lannister can win a tournament, Greyjoy can win a tournament.
We know what the other houses are, Roy.
Thank you, Aaron.
Roy's having a rough day, sorry.
You don't think Tyrell
is caused by...
As usual.
You don't think Tyrell bannered into something else can win a tournament right now?
No. I think Tyrell has a really serious problem with interacting with the opponent. Everything Tyrell does tries to build itself up, or almost everything, I guess, except Tygarden, really, tries to build itself up, and there's not enough that actually does shit to opponents' characters.
That's why I think them bannering to Martell is actually a deck that can work really well right now. Because you have that extra economy boost from the location that just came out, the limited one, and you also get the Martell icon removal package.
Don't say the armor. You'll get frickin' trolled. So
go ahead, troll me on the non-social media I participate on.
No, the problem with that deck to me is Banner to Martell for the moment is more or less still Banner to Nymeria. And like while that's good, it's not ideal. I could see maybe a Banner Dragon for Miri, but then like again, you're now bannering to Miri with the side of Illyrio, who is there to support Miri.
I think you get some other decent cards out of that.
Yeah, well, you also
like all of this is a bunch of decent stuff. Like, and then you're really like you're playing Tyrell for a bunch of non-loyal stuff. That's probably better to just use the other house and banner to the Rose.
I agree with you that Tyrell as main house is probably not optimal, but I don't agree that it's not something that could win a tournament.
It's not winning a tournament with good players.
If the good player is playing the Tyrell banner to something, I think that there are enough options that they could play their way to victory, with a suboptimal deck.
I mean, maybe in Shazam.
I agree with Tommy. A great option. Sorry, I should say Sun as a banner there. And Lion as well. I don't necessarily think they're the top of the heat at the moment, but yeah, I agree with Tommy that they can stand a fighting.
Yeah,
I've also seen a Tyrell to Greyjoy that's actually pretty damn good, too.
All of those decks, every deck you just said, is better with Tyrell as the banner. It's
probably
better as Rose banner. Every single one. Every single one is better Rose banner.
The one nice thing about it, though, is that you overcome the economy disadvantage.
Yeah, that Lannister economy disadvantage, man, that sure is a problem.
No, I would definitely take Tyrell Bissars for sure.
Oh, God.
Better income in Tyrell.
Yeah, Gaston Grey. And in a few weeks, whatever her name is.
Once she's out, but she's not out right now.
Okay, you know what? I will take Gaston Grey over literally every Tyrell card.
Jeez, I don't know if I can agree with that. Having the Mander and the Arbor fueling your ability to get your little Sand Snake package out there is probably, for the moment, better. Because Tyene is...
Nobody else has that marshalling phase draw.
And you do get to offset it because the Arbor 2. Like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff to like right now. I still agree that it's not one of the top houses, but I don't think that it's insurmountable for a good player to come to a tournament with a Tyrell deck and win.
So, A, what I think we're saying is we have to build a Tyrell deck. And B, the second thing I think we're saying is that Will and Tommy, who are good players, are agreeing to take Tyrell to that... where do you live, Will? Missouri Regional.
Yes. Hey, I was already strongly leaning toward it.
And one of them is going to win because they are good players, and good players can win with this deck.
Yeah.
Well,
dictate that they should win the tournament.
Okay. So there'll be the next chapter pack, which again, of course, changes the logic here, but. Let's go back, though, to this initial question. All right, so why is Night's Watch, though, which is constantly derided as being the bottom-tier faction, better than Tyrell, then, Aaron? That's sort of the reverse of this question that's already here.
Because if we're talking about main houses, I actually like the Night's Watch loyal stuff.
Okay. So you love the draw engine. And
I like the draw engine. I like the repeatable. I think Yorin is amazing card advantage.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
I think if you're going mono, for sure.
In Knights, mono or not, like, Yorin's incredible. But, like, even in if you're Night's Watch main with a different banner, Castle Black tends to get exponentially better, and Castle Black is one of those underrated cards in the game. There's another card I'm missing because, of course, you know, Throne CB is still down, and now I'm just like, oh, there's good cards. What else is there? There's something else I'm forgetting that's really good. That's Night's Watch.
Yorin, Draw Engine, Sam.
Yeah, that's still
good. I know. I'm thinking. Aemon. No, Aemon's not loyal.
Aemon's not loyal.
We're naming good cards.
What's his name?
I mean, he's not Aemon, that good. Aemon is also better in Night's Watch main, right?
Yeah, Will? Of course he is.
Well, yeah.
Will, yeah. Will's the other card. Well, Will is a good card, and
yeah, Will's a good card in defense. But yes, there's someone or something I'm forgetting, and it's just gone. But it's fine.
Oh, the murder event?
The murder event's okay. I don't really like it.
Watcher on the
walls. Yeah. Watcher on the walls, yeah.
The murder event's okay.
The plot? I don't know. I'm trying to think of what else you get.
I don't know.
I do like the plot. I mean, the black, meager contribution.
Meager's okay. That new location's going to be good.
The one that was spoiled?
Yeah.
Okay, so, well, then what is Night's Watch's best banner then? Wolf?
It's probably still
Lion?
Kraken. Probably still Kraken.
Kraken? Okay.
I mean, I would say there's always a lot.
I think it changes pretty radically if it's anything on the aggro spectrum versus a wall.
Yeah. Well, wall is sun and stag or fealty. Well,
that's what I was going to say was stag.
Otherwise, it's Lannister or Greyjoy, right?
Maybe. I still kind of like some Avatar around the. It's probably.
Why won't Thrones DB work? It's making me so sad. I really don't want to build this in Card Game DB, guys.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna move. I think it's good before we move and.
Did we talk about every house? Because we've totally only talked about like three houses.
Yeah, that's what I was going to do. So why don't we
just
talk.
The top and bottom of the spectrum. Nothing in
there. Yeah. So we've talked about Lannister. Why don't we talk then about the house that's nearest and dearest to my heart, which is, I think, Stark. I think Stark is weirdly underrated by people. I think there's like several really, really interesting builds. Even before Ward comes out, which I think Ward's going to draw a little bit more attention to Stark. Even before Ward comes out, I think Stark's a really flexible faction that can build in several different ways. Like, I mean, this is the key thing that I saw in Dance, which is that there was sort of a build that I came to Dance with that was more rushy and built sort of around some of the more built around some of the Wolves cards, particularly like Wolf, the new Catelyn. And then there was a Winterfell deck that Britt Fitch, that was, you know, very, very different, much more tempo based, much more slowly. And we both had a great, much slower deck. We both had a great deal of success with it and in a very, very competitive field. And I'm really just impressed. Like, I think the sleeper of this season is really been Stark, because Stark's cards are not as flashy. They're not as like pound you in the face as some of the Lannister cards or even some of the Baratheon cards or the Martell cards, but they're very just efficient and interesting. And that sacrifice package is really, really fun and really, really skillful to have to use. And that's one of the reasons why I think Stark is in a really good place right now. That's just going to get better with Ward, which is really difficult to predict exactly what Ward is going to do.
I'm going to jump in to start with a quick observation about Stark. I think it's actually in kind of a weird, unique place compared to else, because the other houses have got these fairly established builds that have been just getting very incremental updates. But Stark, on the other hand, just got this huge box, which it is a plus and a minus. They have a ton of options, but suddenly now people are out there experimenting and fiddling with all of these options and haven't had the time to get the reps in and hone things the way the other houses have.
But that's why I felt like it was a misnomer to say that they're a dark horse, given that they have the highest concentration of cards in the card pool right now.
I think that's true.
A blessing and a curse. People, especially newer people, don't necessarily know how to build with that many options yet. I think that's a big part of what's holding them back.
Sure, but people expect more out of the house that has the most cards is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
I think that's true, but I also think like one of the weird I think Lannister's obvious dominance and the fact that when you and for a long time, particularly right when Wolves was released, and to a lesser extent Barra being sort of the second best faction, like nothing in Stark immediately screams, oh my god, this is an answer to what the current meta is.
Yeah, well, that's not true at all.
Well, one card does. All right. But a lot of people...
So
don't like. But here's the thing, Aaron. I've talked to enough people. I've looked at results of tournaments. I've been to tournaments, and people still haven't like glammed onto how good Winterfell is. So what I'm saying is this: people, because the Stark cards aren't flashy, that's what makes them a dark horse. But when you play Stark and you really get, as Will was saying, these reps in, you realize that while Stark doesn't have straightforward answers to the way in which 2.0 is played right now, it has alternative ways of playing the games, alternative ways of card advantage that aren't necessarily immediately intuitive just when you cold read the cards. But once you have those reps in with Stark Fealty or Stark Crossing or a few of the Stark Banner builds, you will really see that these cards really do change the way in which 2.0 operates in a way that's not the same as what Lannister is doing, not the same as what Baratheon is doing, which, you know, because Stark was so on the margins. The only people who... The only person who was really – there were some people in Europe, but in North America, you know, Cameron was the only one who was really having huge success with Stark. And, I had okay success with Stark before the box in the Northeast here. But no one had – like Stark was not the faction that people thought about. And now they have all these more cards. People still are undercounting them. That's what I mean when they're a dark horse. Okay.
Yes, Stark is playing the exact same game as Lannister. Sorry. Shit out a bunch of big cards. Protect them as with every way you can, win the game.
I think the way that they're protecting is converse, though.
I mean, sure, Lannister is by having intrigue icons, right? Like, that's the biggest difference. There's not a huge
instance. Well, the Stark is also offering surprises and reactions where Stark is doing the exact opposite, saying, we're going to have none of that.
Right, I mean, and sure, the sacrifice package is different than the Lannister ambush package. It just is.
It's a different threat of activation.
But, right. That's what I mean. There's only so many different ways Thrones can be played, Aaron. I apologize if I was overselling.
I feel like Barra plays an entirely different game than Lanny. And, like, Martell plays an entirely different game than Lanny. But, like...
Night's Watch plays an entirely different game than but everybody else. It's the only one that I will use to say plays an entirely different game. Everybody else is playing the same game. They're all just playing it at different paces.
Yeah, I feel like Stark and Targ and Lannister are fairly samey.
I mean, yes and no. Because I would say that
Greyjoy is the noob version of those.
Yeah. Well, the best example, I guess the best examples of decks that are really playing a different game, I think, is Night's Watch. To a lesser extent, Martell. But it's still, at the end of the day, a lot of 2.0 is about finding the best way of shitting out your best characters, protecting those characters, and winning either with the tricks that the characters provide you with or renown. Like, that's at its core what 2.0 is. And various factions provide you with different spices. And I would say that what's at least refreshing to me, and again, my biases could be showing, about Stark as it exists right now, is its flavor, at least to me, tastes different than Lannister's flavor or Targaryen's flavor or Greyjoy's flavor.
See, and what just tickled my fancy listening to you talk here, Roy, is given that Night's Watch is the only one that's playing a different game, in actuality, how fun would it be to make a reset deck right now?
It's pretty fun. That's the Tyrell deck that I've been playing with the Arbor and all. I'm just running every reset I can.
I don't think that that's nearly getting enough press right now.
This is definitely, I think that's definitely the case. I mean, one of the surprises of Dance was Sandy's Varus deck, which, you know, was not a very optimized deck because it was mostly just Sandy with built-in spamming emails at Aaron and I. But he was the only one running Varus at that entire tournament, and he surprised many good players with the fact that he was running Varus.
Wow, that's amazing to hear quite that.
Spoilers, Varus, still good. So, agreed. You know why I think Varus doesn't get as much play now? A lot of the same reason I think Tyrell has issues. What house eats Tyrell?
Greyjoy.
I think Greyjoy kills your Varus real easy. If you're making that gold investment in Varus, Greyjoy's probably going to be able to see stone him. And at that point, like, a lot of what your deck wants to do, that's not happening. And you know who else eats Varus? Like, eats Varus?
Flanny.
Miri.
Yeah, Miri makes him cry.
Like, and those are really big things in the meta. Like, I don't think Greyjoy is especially great, but, like, it's still played an awful lot, right? And Miri is in every goddamn deck right now because she's the new hotness. And I feel like those are really hardcore Varus counters.
Okay, so moving on from Stark. So we've done Lannister, Night's Watch, Tyrell, Stark. Well, I mean, Aaron, you were mentioning this. So Barra, why does Barra play a different way? Where is, you know, Barra sitting right now?
Barra keeps things melt. Barrow never got worse. Barrow was always probably one of the top two or three houses. It was sort of weak to Targ, and Targ was everywhere, but like you can build around that more or less. Barrow is just good. Like it does a lot of things that when your seven gold investment isn't standing, and their seven gold investment is like, and that seven gold investment is then going to kneel more of your stuff. Like they're at a really big tempo advantage, and
well, the new still hard to overcome. So much better.
Yeah, even Hand of Justice is a silly, silly card. I still don't understand why people aren't freaking out about that. Like I've said every time I talk about Even Hand of Justice anywhere, I go, why are people not freaking out about how good this card is? Like people freak out about like Braun, who's not good, Tommy, but like Even Hand of Justice, they're just like, oh yeah, that's a card that got printed. It's like, what are you on drugs? Even Hand of Justice is amazing.
Yeah, Even Hand of Justice is phenomenal, and I think that has a hand in Barra moving up. And yeah, there we go. or at least Barra staying while one of the earlier kind of natural counters in Targaryen has kind of shifted down, because Barra is still getting additional cards like for that meal. And one of the factors that made Targaryen a solid counter earlier was their stand theme. They haven't really gotten much to add to on that, at least certainly nothing to quite keep up on that one-to-one battle.
Well, Targ just ruined the matchup because so many Targ players are cutting Dany right now. And it's just like, hey, did you forget Barra's a house that exists? Because Barra's a house that exists, and you probably want Dany for that matchup.
And probably.
Well, yeah, but like with Stannis, how many of your hatchlings are standing? Well,
no, I'm mainly meant to stand.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, and that's kind of where an offensive first snow comes into play, returning your hatchlings to hand.
Interesting hatchling note someone convinced me of. I want to say it was Ruben. What are your hatchling numbers right now?
Two for each.
Maybe two of each. Maybe a third of Rhaegal if you're really afraid of Barra.
Two of each and three of the intrigue have always been my numbers.
Yeah. I'm going to give Ruben credit. If it wasn't Ruben, you should tell me who you were and I will correct this. But 3-3-1 is much more optimal in a first snow meta. You really want that dragon dupe, right? Like, you really want
to running three of Rhaegal, three of Viserion, and one Drogon?
Yep.
Okay.
It's just, if you really want one dupe for first snow, right? You want to, you still want to run the same number of overall dragons, which was seven, yes? No, eight. Math. No, I'm good at math. No, seven. Yeah, I'm bad at math. We knew that. But, like, you still want to run the same overall number of dragons, except you want to emphasize the possibility that you're going to get a dupe so that you'll have one for first snow. Because Dracarys on a first snow turn, let me just tell you, is really funny.
Ridiculous.
I like it. I think it makes sense to play it out and kind of see. It does worry me a little that my odds also go up that I'm just drawing a dupe of one of those dragons in the late game. But, I'm definitely sufficiently intrigued to give it a try and see how it feels.
You know what dragon? You know what dragon I'm digging for a lot in the late game? Once the boards get a little big and I've already used Wildfire, I really, really want Viserion. I want that stealth. Like, I don't care about Drogon at that point. I want that stealth.
Right. I mean, I see the benefits of this, but I think Drogon, particularly with Targaryen as your main house, well, which obviously if you're running the Dany module, it has to be your main house. I don't know. That renown on Dany, he's really kind of killer, because I've been able to beat Targ decks pretty consistently that aren't able to get Drogon out stably, because they can win one to two challenges with Dany and draw cards, but they're not putting renown on this character that is just owning me. And that at the end of the day, if you have two or three renown characters and they have, what, Jorah or maybe Khal Drogo as their renown sources, maybe Jaime if they're running Banner of the Lion, like, you can outrush them. You can close much faster than they can.
So to that point, does this configuration of dragon-style deck run the silver?
No. I don't. Yeah, I don't like it. I don't need it.
I don't like that card either. I'm just curious. Like, is there ever going to be a home for it?
Like, no. I mean, Melee. Yeah, Melee's a home. But, like, Barra tends to have one renowned character that usually, unless, you know, you're getting rolled, participates in one challenge, which, you know, I think Drogo is a fine facsimile of. I don't need multiple renowned when I've got that much other control. Like, only very few houses, and like Martell has almost none. Martell has almost no renown that it runs.
You know what makes this?
Well, that's one of the. But isn't that one of the problems that main house Martell has no, had? Man.
No, I mean, it was, but now it's not. Like, it just took now a while for Control to get that good. I mean, no, I now, not like in a week. Like, now Martell is good. Now Martell just won a giant Swiss tournament. Now it was the top of Swiss at the Fracas. Not the Fracas. Which was this one?
Dockside Brothel Days?
The Brothel Days.
Brothel Days.
Sorry about that, guys. I miss you. Love you, Dutch players. But yeah, like it was just top of Swiss there, and it like the deck is like Martell is there. Renown is phenomenal, but I feel like we've almost hit a tipping point for removal where Control has officially hit where it needs to be.
So this Targ deck, the way that we're describing it, it sounds like even versus Martell or Bera, Nightmares is the card that pushes that over the top. It sounds like you'll be able to compensate any of the problems that we're discussing with a timely Nightmares.
Nightmares real good, yeah. I mean, like, did we not think Nightmares was going to be really good?
It's a fantastic card.
Like, there's no deck. There's decks you can't fit Nightmares, but there's no deck that Nightmares doesn't fit in.
And that does, of course, run into the same problem that it had at 1.0, right? Where it was never a bad card at 1.0, but it sort of got outspaced.
I mean,
okay. So, I mean, there's just a couple other houses left to hit, and they're still in that mid-run talking about. I know we've kind of been dancing around them. We've been bringing them up in passing and in connection with these other houses. But let's take a look first at Popular. Let's take a look at Rage next. And I think one of the prime things there is just their deck main kind of concept and deck hasn't really changed much. Other stuff has evolved and come up around them, but their key cards are still those from the core set and the first chapter pack.
Greyjoy, you know, there's one huge change in Greyjoy.
We just got Iron Mines?
No. I mean, that's a change. Okay. Like, that's already a thing Greyjoy was trying to do. But Greyjoy used to, like, despite what the card said, really want to go second, and now I think, I don't remember the name of the location, but that it really wants to go first now, which is a huge
Warship. The Longship.
Yeah, what's it called?
Raiding Longship?
Yeah, the Raiding Longship, thank you. Due to the Raiding Longship, I think Greyjoy actively wants to go first now, and before, like, going first wasn't a thing they wanted at all. Leaping Lions absolutely eats Greyjoy. All varieties of Greyjoy alive.
Yeah, the word I would choose is eviscerates.
Yeah, it's not even a match. It just destroys Greyjoy's face off. Like, you know what?
Same with Targaryen.
Yeah, going first isn't that great when I have almost nothing on the board first except a Tywin that's duped with an attachment.
Please take some power from me to steal from you.
Yeah, and then I just jump in whatever I need. Also,
you have to almost envision that Lannister deck as the Knights of the Hollow Hill Targ deck running triplicate Jumper Drogos.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, also, the mountain is a problem for Greyjoy, particularly a mountain that can get, stealth. Like, jumped in. Like, they can't get stealthed by a Great Kraken or by an Asha. He is a problem for Greyjoy. And both his pillage hurts Greyjoy a lot because it eats away at their saves. And, you know, Greyjoy has, like, a curve that's clustered, similar to Stark has a problem with this. And the mountain being able to snuck in the post after stealth is just makes... As someone who loves Greyjoy Crossing, like, it just makes Greyjoy players cry. Like, Lannister, traditionally Greyjoy can stop Lannister, but the popularity of Jumping Lions and Lanny Kraken, which are both sort of designed to beat Greyjoy Fealty or Greyjoy Crossing, makes Greyjoy really weak right now.
That's a great point about the clustered curve. I don't hear enough people talking about that, Roy, but that is a legitimate problem for them.
So it's not like designed to beat that. It's a happy accident. No one designs to beat Greyjoy. Greyjoy is not good enough to design to beat it. You have to design to beat Lannister and Targ and Bear. You don't design to beat Greyjoy. Like, if you beat Greyjoy, that's great, but you're probably not going to run into it in the cut, so don't freak out.
Do you go to any major tournament expecting not to see Greyjoy right now?
Sure, but how much Greyjoy do you expect to see in the cut?
Well, if you're in Denver, it'd be the entire cut.
I was going to say, are you off the eight? If it's cut to eight, it's one player in eight.
Yeah, so like, and they tend to lose in the round of eight, unless they're Dan's draw. They tend to lose in that first round, so unless you're the one unlucky person who plays them, you'll be
Unfortunately,
fine.
I think a lot of people probably learned lessons from Dan's showing, though.
Nah.
Well, yeah, I mean, like,
you can try and learn whatever you want from Dan, and then, like... Well, like, I've been trying... Like, I'm pretty good. Like, I'm not Dan, but I'm pretty good. Like, and I've played Dan decks for years. You don't, like, just learn to play decks that Dan's really good with that way. That's not the true thing.
Right. But the Greyjoy
That's more so
dragon.
True to 1.0. I mean, this the Greyjoy deck is there. I mean, if you are a good player And I mean, I'm not even saying great player, just a good player. That deck will perform for you.
I mean, it'll perform 4/2.
Okay. I mean, the Greyjoy Dragon deck is it's the best Greyjoy deck out there right now.
No, it's not.
And
you don't think I disagree with that.
Still lying.
Okay. All right. Well, it's one of the best Greyjoy decks then. So, I mean, Greyjoy's a fine, it's in a fine place. It's just, yes, I do agree with Aaron overall. If you really are looking to take home a tournament, Greyjoy's probably not the faction that you want to go to right now.
However, if you're semi-new and you want to play something that like you'll win a few games with and have fun with, Greyjoy's really good.
And if you're selling the player, you could make the cut. Like, I mean, it's not
yeah, that's what I was going to say. Best case for somebody that is inexperienced to make the cut, that's your deck.
Yeah. Like, people always say, like, some Greyjoy player recently was like, man, I hate Lannister because you can just throw a bunch of cards in a deck and it's, like, obvious what to play and what to do. And I was like, you're a Greyjoy player. Like, what statement are you making as a Greyjoy player? Like, your deck requires literally no thought.
Yeah, I think there's a huge there's a huge difference there. I mean, yeah, you could totally go the Lords of the Crossing, just mash out guys, but I don't think that you're going to win, especially once you get into the cut, if you can make the cut. If you're going to try and do that, you're probably better off doing main house Targaryen with a banner to Lannister and just going full out Bash Brothers and trying to push through challenges and hit off events, high claim style. Yeah. If you're inexperienced and you're just saying, oh, Lannister economy and autopilot Lannister cards, that's probably what you're looking for. It's not either Lanny jumpers or a well-tuned Lanny banner to anything.
So the real answer, if you're new and actually want a chance at winning a tournament, has been the same since the core set environment. It's Barrow Fealty.
I think that's gotten more challenging now that the new events come out.
I mean, sure, but that's literally, like, besides that, what did it add? Like, the little draw guy?
Well, I think your plot lineup has changed as well.
Yeah,
I think initially a lot of people were playing two copies of the Filthy Accusations to help bail them out, and really bad players were winning tournaments with Barrow Fealty, like, regularly, just because they could literally kneel out everything.
Like Staten.
Staten. I forgot that guy actually played second.
I didn't know he ever won a tournament.
He didn't. I just wanted to throw some shade at Staten because he beat me with Barrow Fealty because I set up like a card and had 8 limited cards in hand. It was ridiculous.
This is at the launch tournament, right?
That was at the launch tournament, yeah.
So you're telling me you lost to Staten?
Yeah, definitely lost to Staten. Like, look, if you see four limited cards in the past. Wait. If you see 4 limited cards on your setup hand, and then after you set up, draw back into 2 more, like, you're gonna lose that game. Sorry, like,
no joke.
Welcome to Variant.
Yeah,
like, and I was running Taxation in that deck, and it's like, great. Now I can play 2 and still have 5 limited cards in hand. Insane.
But no, you understand my point, though, that the way that Barrow Fealty has evolved, I think has gotten less autopilot and more skill intensive. It's still not highly skill intensive, but it's not slam dunk for any idiot to play.
It's not Greyjoy.
Yep. you hit the nail on the head there, sir.
Yeah, I still think, like, if you have a solid understanding of the game, like, not like it can't be your first tournament probably, but like, if you have a solid understanding of the game but you're still relatively new, you're middle of the pack, you should probably take Barrow Fealty. I think you'll be fine, probably make the cut. Like, there's decks that just fold to Barrow Fealty. Lots
only
of
only so good many people deck. I don't know how much you ought to promise.
Look see me, I'll send you one.
Okay, I have this one more faction. That's Martell. So, Aaron, you were the big Martell.
Wait, what?
Didn't we talk about Martell?
I thought we were talking about Night's Watch next.
We did Night's Watch.
We talked about Night's Watch.
Yeah, we definitely
should. We talked everything but Martell. Martell, we sort of like similar to Greyjoy, we sort of talked around that. We talked around Martell.
I must have blacked out the Night's Watch thing.
No, because remember we talked about how Aaron likes the draw package and
right
after the skip.
So Martell is an answer, is one of the answers to Lannister. Well, the question really is, let's exclude Tyene from this discussion, because I think Tyene, the card's not out yet. She's also obviously just really good. What besides Tyene is making Martell good right now?
Gaston Grey.
Everything. Like, they just have good options. I think Martell Lion has to be it, though. I don't know if there's maybe Rose, but probably Martell Lion has to be it, because they do.
Yeah, Aaron, you and I have already talked about this.
I mean,
that's the play if you want to go Martell main house right now.
like Donovan has his that's crazy good. Buzz has his that's crazy good. There's just like you like what Martell needs is upper curve help, and you don't get upper curve help like Tyrion, Jamie, and Mountain.
Exactly.
I still feel like they could stand.
I mean, they have none.
But when you over,
they have literally. Oh wait,
when you overcompensate with when you overcompensate with economy, you're able to make up by playing a copy of Counting Coppers. And don't forget, they do have the green blood merchants or traders or whatever the hell they're called. So you're getting card quality over quantity. I mean, it's not optimal, but I don't think it becomes as glaring of a weakness as it was before.
It's just not, especially given that like so many people are running for a snow. And when you get to use that green blood weenie twice, it's pretty damn solid.
Yeah, or even with your own first. Why rely on your own?
Yeah, some people run for a snow. Martell, I tend not to, but I know people that do.
What about Martell Stag?
I don't know. Ask Johnny.
I think I prefer it the other direction, but the two do have a nice pairing for sure.
I mean, I just wish Stag had a little bit. Maybe Barristan's enough, but probably not because there's not really any Lords related. You know what? We're underselling Viper. Viper's a good card. Viper's not a good card because he has any text. Viper's a good card because a 7/7 Tricon is pretty solid.
Yeah, that. Wow, he's 7 strength? I always forget that.
Yeah. It really does. Yeah. I mean, not for me. I tend to use him more on defense. He's like what I use to not get put to the sword. And then I just win other challenges because they have to commit so much because he's a 7 strength Tricon. He controls challenge order. He's really good.
I think that's the design, though, is you're supposed to use him on defense to prevent any of that stuff from happening for the first 4 or 5 turns. And then the 1 or 2 times that he attacks in the game, you win.
Yeah, yeah. I'm back on thinking Doran sucks, by the way.
I'm still not very high on myself. I've been trying again, built across the field around 2 weeks ago, and it's just... Not doing it for me, even in what should have about the highest percentage of other lords to use it.
You know what the biggest problem with Doran is? To me, anyway, like I can get what that 6-cost body does, or most of what that 6-cost body does from a 2-cost attachment.
Yeah.
Except the draw.
Yeah, but he has to win challenges. And he's a 6/4. He's very easy to stop.
Yeah, I mean, why couldn't he have been 5 strength? Like, I mean, Stannis is 5 strength.
Why couldn't he have been 6 strength or affected himself?
Yeah, yeah. But again, we're redesigning cards there. All right, so I guess what the main thing I've taken away from this discussion is that the meta is more or less, I think, probably more interesting than a lot of people give it credit for right now. You know, there's that wave of nonstop Lannister, 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 that sort of has been a sub-theme of the Facebook group and Card Game DB. But I think hopefully, and the podcast, I think hopefully, though, this discussion shows that there is points where if you would like to go to a regional in the next 4 or 5 weeks, you have several options if you're trying to seek the cut, not just Lannister X.
Okay, let's illustrate that a little further and pass it around the horn. Each host will take their turn and say that you cannot choose anything with Lannister, either as a banner or main house, top two houses and or house and banner that you would take to play in a tournament.
Who goes?
Will? So you're leading us then, Sandia, right, Zani?
Sure, no problem. And then I would go Barramano, and then I would say probably... I'm a little torn between, but I probably have to go Greyjoy Mono as my top two choices.
Call on somebody.
You.
Okay. I've got like 7. But just for shits and giggles, we're gonna go Stark X and Targ X.
They have to be. You have to call the X out because they can't be Lannister.
Oh, X is Crossing. Sorry, Lords of the Crossing is the agenda. That's what X.
So Targ and Stark, Lord of the Crossing.
Yes.
Got it. That makes sense.
So, wait, can I talk about Targ Crossing for 1 sec? No?
Okay. Sure.
Then I guess I'll just call. Nope, no one said yes, so I'm calling
go
on you, Roy.
Sorry, I was writing down timestamps to try and get the bit where you muted yourself because you didn't put stuff in the fridge.
Yeah. Okay, sorry about that. So, Miri at what is it? She's a 5, right? So, Miri at 7 strength is really good at killing shit. Miri at 7 strength with stealth from Sirio or whatever that little wildling is gonna kill some. And that ends up being really good, especially when you have 2 military challenges to go along with it and Dracarys. I like that deck a lot.
And sounds reasonable.
Roy, fire away. Actually, you know what? I'm going to change my Stark Crossing to Stark Fealty. I think Fealty is a little bit better than Crossing, but it's really close.
Well, Aaron stole my first one, which is Stark Fealty, so I will go with two other ones. I would probably do... Well, number one would be probably Bear a Lion. I think that's pretty ridiculous. Well, we said we can't have a Lannister. Right. Sorry, excuse me. Bear a Sun, then. And then the second would be Targ Sun. That leaves you, Will.
Gosh, okay. If I can't use Lannister or Lion at all, I think if I were taking something, I think I'm probably going to go Targ Kraken. Right. It's the
one of our no-shows was supposed to play that at Dance.
Too bad they didn't make it. I'll be trying to get that in some testing this weekend to get a little bit more, see if that's the final build that I wind up taking at the end of the month or not.
Eh, our builds were 6 of the top 8. That'll have to do.
That's a pretty good ratio.
It was a great tournament. Really, really good one. I really appreciate everyone who came.
Will, you got one more deck?
Oh, I thought Tommy was saying either. Okay. If I had to pick something else right now, I think I'm probably going Bera Sun. Still just really love the amount of control that has available to it. And the stuff that both of those houses keep getting lately keeps fitting right in there quite well.
I think that deck's legit. Greg likes that a lot, too.
Yeah, Bera Sun.
A lot of diversity in those answers. So if you don't want to play Lanny, you got action.
Okay, so listeners, I know we've had a lot of good discussion so far in this episode, and I know we've mentioned a few times that we were going to work toward a non-Lannister regional-style deck build. Unfortunately, we filled out a lot of time, and during that discussion, kind of a key thing that kept coming back is, at the moment, before True Steel's, before War, before Taiyu, so on and so forth. And I think we've all kind of come to the point where we realize that building that build, no matter what house it's going to, is going to shift so radically in just over a week's time when that chapter pack comes out, that we're actually going to hold off on that. Of course, Team Wright will review that pack next week. Then we're going to double back around to build a deck utilizing True Steel the week after that. So what we decided we wanted to do as a bit of a compensation instead was to walk through these houses and kind of explain the mindset then why we want to change this order around and not actually build with any of these houses just yet. So let's start at the top with Marathion. And I think, I mean, one of the things that jumps out at me to begin with here, of course, you know, Sami's going to be great. Expert now is going to be solid, despite him being expensive. But I actually think City Watch is really interesting for them. It's going to push them back in a Banner of the Lion direction and kind of cause a bit of a kind of realignment of the way some of their banner stuff has been going. And, you know, that kind of takes me out of wanting to fiddle with that too much until that's available. What about you guys?
Bera is actually I don't even know how arguable it is, the least affected by this pack because it gets good cards that slot into their decks and doesn't necessarily have to change because of the other meta-altering cards that are coming. However, Lion is probably still the best, and especially with City Watch still the best. Also with Barristan, because that extra gold with Barristan is pretty solid too. So all around...
And Lords and Ladies.
Yeah, very true. So given all of that, we don't really want to build a Lion deck for once. So, we look at these Bera cards, we look at where Bera's going to be going, and so much of that is going to be with Lion. And, if we don't want to build Lion, it's just hey, it's the same cards as the core set, plus 3 times Even-Handed Justice.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Bera gets a lot of interesting cards, or 2 interesting cards, but doesn't... I don't think there's a new build that's going to emerge out of here. And it's certainly not a new, as Aaron says, it's certainly not a new build that doesn't involve Jaime and Tyrion.
I certainly think that
Vera also gets interesting input here. And the more that the gold availability continues to grow from the plots, the more interesting these two cards get. But I also think that Forgotten Plans is one of the more interesting cards for Vera, because they tend to not have, outside of their ability to kneel characters, they tend to not have a lot of manipulation and or other tricks that they can throw. And some of the new plots that have been coming out, their ongoing effects have been really interesting and really hurtful to some of the things Bear is trying to do. And they may find a way to implement that plot better than some of the other houses. So all in all, I just think Bear is going to continue to be interesting, but not necessarily going to alter their overall strategy.
Okay, I guess that sends us over to Greyjoy. And I mean, here I am being the one guy that's just throwing specific cards out there in a positive light for those houses. But I mean, I'm staring at a card in the next pack that I think is almost essentially always a three of for them, Drowned God's Blessing. Huge tears protection right there, so I think it's really popular. And on the flip side, they're also likely to do, you know, really suffer from some things like, say, Tyene, as long as they don't have Iron Mines or some other kind of saves there on the board. So I think they've got stuff pulling both directions on them in this pack, but they've got cards that I want to use.
So Alex ruled that Drowned God's Blessing doesn't protect against tears.
Yeah, oh, that was actually what I was about to say. So yeah.
Tell me more. So what's that?
Because it doesn't target a character. Tears doesn't target a character.
It's one of those classic Thrones rulings, right? It places a token. It doesn't target a character.
Yeah, there's specific wording that has to be there for targeting a character, and Tears does not have that wording. It will protect from put, which, in fairness, like keeps the card a little bit more balanced. It'll protect from that, and it also means that like you can use all your saves for entry challenges. You don't have to worry about that mill kill.
That's absolutely correct, but it makes it a little bit more desirable on a card like Asha, who is absolute Jacaerys bait. More so than Balon, maybe. I mean, obviously, it's still going to Balon because it protects from put and double track or something. But no. Asha, I think it's a bit more desirable on Asha because it doesn't have the tears protection.
You're missing the real strength of it on Balon.
Gives that from your opponent's Seastone Chair.
No, it gives. No, it's the only target your opponent's events. It doesn't protect from Seastone, but that's fine. It gives the Drowned God treat, and then you get Balon with Giant
to strength. Pump him up.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I'm surprised this is weak, but that's stealing team rights under. But anyway,
so yes. I don't think that's what's most important about Greyjoy in this next chapter pack. Anyway, like while that card is very good, I think that Greyjoy has a real decision to make about whether they can afford to play Theon anymore, one of their staple cards, because Ward is in the meta. Greyjoy has to run Rattleshirt Raiders, because if Martell sees a couple imprisoned, that's over. That Greyjoy has to run Cancel on top of their saves because Tyene is in the meta. It's all the different things that happen for other houses that change the way Greyjoy has to be built. And it's actually going to take a while, I think, and a fair bit of skill for players to figure out how to build Greyjoy so as not to get eaten by the eight different meta threats that just emerged for them.
Yep, that's exactly where I was going with this. Drowned God's Blessing makes it seem like, oh, here's a huge boon for Greyjoy. But every other thing in this entire pack is pretty much, hey, here's a middle finger, Greyjoy. You guys have got a slew of stuff you got to deal with. And yeah. I think their popularity and their ability for new players to autopilot to potential cuts is going to disappear rapidly after this pack.
Yeah, Tyene is just a straight up for Greyjoy.
So is Old Bear's Crow.
Yeah, well, Old Bear's Crow is just a straight up really good card. But again, we're stealing from Team Right and from our Night's Watch discussion.
Yeah, next house.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, so the next house then sends us to Lannister. And I guess there's no good way for us to not still be bringing up cards here with this task we set ourselves. And Illyn Payne, I think, is really going to shake things up. More punishment for that lower cost slot. Maybe shakes things up more for some of the other houses. But he's definitely an include you're going to want to be looking at. Maybe you're still going to want to be including Treachery to stop Tyene. I don't know why anyone would have taken it out of a deck yet. But no, I think Lannister comes out of this pack in a fairly good place. You maybe reconsider Cersei the like in light of word, but the stuff that you want to play is at that 5 and up cost slot for them lately anyway, so yeah, I think they come out okay.
So, well, here's the one thing I'll say about Ward is it almost gives Lannister. Me a little... Okay. It almost gives me a little bit of feel in, like, Cersei was the first place that I thought about it as a person who likes to play Lannister. But I think about it and I say, is this going to change the way that I build decks? Or is it going to make other people say, don't include your powerhouse 4 cost characters or lower because you're afraid of this, and then it becomes absolutely nothing, as we've seen some trends in 1.0, where the threat of it makes everybody think, oh, don't do it, and then no one plays it, kind of thing. That's kind of the way that I'm feeling about Ward. So I think Lannister comes out actually even better because of their ability to still continue to play Cersei, because even though everybody's going to think everyone's going to play Ward, no one's actually going to do it.
Yeah,
well,
I'm a,
and a
I'm,
related wait. Note to that, you know, or at least kind of tying those two points together. The stuff that Lannister does want is either dodges with the Hound, or they've got the highest kind of density of power stuff at cost points that it doesn't hit. So maybe so,
absolutely
that way.
I'm a play Ward. Like, yeah, I'm gonna totally play Ward. So that's who's playing Ward, me.
You are.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. In the meantime. Beyond that, like, here's how Ward hits Lannister. It can steal its... here's how Ward affects Lannister's building more than anything else. Like, if you were running 2 or 3 Cersei, you should probably stop. If you're running 2 or 3 Pycelle, you should probably stop. Those uniques that you're running 2 or 3 of, you can afford to still run them unless they claim a bunch of power, which is the problem with Theon, because you can't just have him warded and lose the game immediately. That's
really Does that bad. Make Bronn better?
No, I just don't care about him.
Yeah, just...
yeah, but Ward specifically, like, if you get your Cersei warded and then, like, you end up top decking because now they're clearing out your hand with your own Cersei, you cannot afford to draw that Cersei.
Also, Ward is one of the best Lannister cards ever printed, right? Like, Lannister Banner of the Wolf is going to definitely become a thing after this chapter pack, if it wasn't already.
It never stopped being a thing. People just stopped playing it.
Yeah, right. But it becomes even better with Fast Eddie and Ward, plus, you know, already Arya, Brand, blah, 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 all the great cards. I mean, this is a deck that in some ways just builds itself. So that's the other thing. Like, Lannister, I think the two... I mean, Ilyn Payne is a great card. Don't get me wrong. Playing Whack-A-Dragon would be very fun. But I think the other cards that factions get, like we already mentioned, the Baratheon army, Ward... it just makes Lannister's banner possibilities open up even more. So we may, you know, Lannister's deck building will change, but also Lannister's deck building decisions, positive deck building decisions versus negative deck building decisions, is also going to shift in really interesting ways. So we're going to see the return of some older Lannister banner houses that have been sort of out of fashion.
Between Ilyn and Ward being in the meta, a lot of things that you might otherwise want to run multiples of have to become one-ofs. Arya. Things like Margaery, like a lot of the dragons change, like the way you build decks with this much low cost hate on top of First Snow has to change. When you Ilyn Margaery and then they draw Margaery dead dupes, and you Ilyn or whatever with any of these cards, it's a huge tempo hit. Like, it's impossible to understate how many low cost characters are going to go from 2 and 3 of to 1 of, like, immediately.
Speaking of the end of left and right.
Who?
Oh.
First Snow did that.
Okay, I think that probably sends us on to the next house, which is Martell. And we've been dancing around and mentioning. I mean, we get Tyghe, which is going to be such a huge... We were talking earlier about their lack of draw. Now they're going to get some repeatable removal, which is still, you know, card advantage here. And I think... That's going to be a lot to boost them way up. Makes me very wary of building with them before now, because I just want to use this.
Imprisoned owns Lannister.
And Greyjoy.
I think Imprisoned's being very heavily underrated.
But Stark at least has the no-attachment direwolves and stuff. Like, Gregor and Jaime without a military icon. One is literally useless, and one is basically useless.
I think Stark is a little bit... I think Stark is going to move a little bit away from dominating military challenge, at least in the short term, and more towards focus on the power challenge in response to how popular that attachment might be.
Condemned.
Yeah, well, condemned is also probably.
Martell hammers Greyjoy, too.
Well, yeah, it hammers Greyjoy in particular, because at least Stark has the direwolf tech and has the plot to slide people in if you do bullshit to them. But Greyjoy has no answers besides we do not sow and confiscation and running rattle shirts. Like, it's going to be rough to get that unopposed challenge if you put an imprisoned on your Balon and a condemned on your Asha, and it's just like, well, what the fuck do I do now?
You run three rattle shirts, Raiders, and Greyjoy from now on. But again, neither here nor there.
If you can get them, if you can win a military challenge with them participating.
And assuming your opponent.
Yeah, I don't think I'm running Theon anymore.
Yeah, he's a dangerous card.
It's gonna be
like, if you're playing Stark, you just let him get composed for a while, and you're like, yeah, thanks.
Yeah. Very thematic.
Okay, does that send us on to Stark already? I feel like we've been talking about Stark the entire time. Like, I don't know that there's anything else to say about
it. Yeah, Ward owns Tyrell's entire life. Tyrell's most important card, bar none, character, excuse me, probably not card. Tyrell's most important character, bar none, is Margaery. And only being able to run one Margaery, maybe two if you're feeling brave and you know your meta, is going to suck.
Yeah, it's pretty big time. You probably will only see Tyrell as a banner house for a little while.
Even then, you're sort of bannering for Margaery, right? Like,
but I feel like your risks could be mitigated a little bit there.
Maybe.
But what about Tyrell? I mean, this is one of the things. Like, Tyrell, Banner of the Wolf, that's wants to run the Arbor and Ward. I mean, does Ward help Tyrell in that sense?
I mean, sure, but that deck's not good, so.
Okay.
I'm intrigued.
Thank you, Aaron. I actually think Septa Mordain is actually a pretty interesting card. I think she replaces a lot of Stark decks right now are running Old Nan, even if they don't give a shit about the Winter tech. Well, Septa Mordain basically fits that because she has much better synergies with cards that you already want to run in Stark. So Stark will be making some interesting deck building choices, and Ward just fundamentally changes every Stark deck that's currently played right now.
Even if you're not running it, like, can you still run three Bran, three Arya? How many Sansa are you running now? That kind of thing has to change with Ward and Illidan, right? Like, your deck built, like, thank God Stark has so many cards because they're about to need them. They need that variety in the low cost slot, which is going to be a major strength of Stark main house.
And not being able to play multiple brands hurts a lot.
I mean, I think I still run two because, like, Summer mitigates that a lot, and maybe three. But he's basically it for low cost guys I'm willing to go more than one of.
Yeah, I think there are ways to get Bran back, and also but not being able to safely say, I mean, one of the nicest things about a Stark player is slapping Bran down against a Lannister player. It's a huge relief. And now Sir Illyn makes that much less of a nice feeling. So because even Winterfell doesn't save Bran from getting the axe. So both Illyn Payne and Ward just fundamentally change Stark decks, and it's going to be interesting to see where Stark goes in that direction. But we're definitely going to see a lot more Banner of the Wolf.
Next house.
Okay, after that, it sends us to Targaryen. And Targaryen, I think, is a I feel, doesn't change a ton negatively in light of some of these cards we've been looking at when you've got a lot of that low-cost curve. That could be hit by with no attachments anyway, but you do get a huge boon in Funeral Pyre, and suddenly having actual draw in Targaryen seems pretty tasty.
People have been cutting Dany. I don't think that's the right move, but it's happening a lot. It's making cuts. It's playing great, apparently. People have been cutting Dany. Like, I think that's a mistake, but if you're going to do it, you damn well better be running three Funeral Pyre.
I love Funeral Pyre. It's the card that Targaryen wanted. I think it slots in three of in most Targaryen builds. I do think, though, that Illyn Payne changes the way in which Targ builds. I mean, just his ability to whack a dragon will be really frustrating for Targaryen, particularly a Dany Targaryen build.
I don't necessarily think so. I think it just means that Fire and Blood sees a lot more play again. We're getting ahead of the meta. That'll be in, you know, a month or two.
I think Targ is still going to be so susceptible to the influx of Martell that's going to be in the meta that even with the added draw, you're not really attracted to playing Targaryen after this pack.
You know who this CP fucks over? Khal Drogo.
Kind of what I was hinting at.
Yeah. Once he's imprisoned or Tyene'd or, 18 different things.
I mean, but we also don't know what Jogo does. So
Yes, Drogo could say Khal Drogo get the military icon and plus 6 stream. But in all likelihood,
Drogo. Yeah, well, he would have synergy with Danny, right? Because he's a
Drogo?
Yeah, Drogo's one of Danny's blood riders.
Yeah, but not, the other guys not?
Well, they were going to have, they have synergy with each other.
Yeah, so wouldn't we expect Drogo to just have synergy with the other blood riders?
I agree, Danny? But yes, but he wouldn't have, but he'd be more likely to have synergy with Danny than Khal Drogo.
Yeah, he certainly wouldn't have synergy with Drogo.
No, he'll have synergy with blood riders because that's
right.
Be what they're printing.
But we don't know what he does. Like, if he's as good as the first edition Drogo, I mean, that's an amazing card for Targaryen.
This is kind of, like, wildly speculative now.
Right.
Yeah, we may not want to go that wildly speculative. Maybe that means it's time to kind of wrap up with the last couple of factions here.
Yeah.
Okay. Night's Watch, then, is our box to last. And they're another one that's in kind of an awkward spot. You know, one of the big cards we're looking at here isn't going to do too much to them, thanks to all the no attachments or no attachments except weapon stuff. On the other hand, Tyeen is just going to eat all those Rangers alive. Top of personal and stuff. I'm not really digging Night's Watch after this.
I am. I think their defense deck gets two huge boosts. Huge boosts. That bird, because... We know nothing, in case you ever forget that, because Old Bear is really good in Night's Watch defense. When the core set came out, we thought, oh my god, an 11 gold combo. Like, that's hard to do. Meanwhile, we've set up like 3-16 gold combos with like 5 cards, and she's like, yeah, of course, without a reset, you can do that all the time. So, Old Bear is really good. Old Bear with an intrigue icon and stealth is really good. And being able to, if you're good enough, and, you know, if you're playing enough Night's Watch, hint nudge to certain people who play a lot of Night's Watch, being able to Forgotten Plans for a snow is quite the good move.
Absolutely. You can't underrate the bird. The bird is
the word. Non-loyal.
The bird. Old Bear's Crow is just, it's non-loyal stealth. It's non-loyal stealth. It makes Banner of the Watch better. It makes the defense deck better, and even the chud that they're getting is very solid. So this is actually a very good pack for Night's Watch. It changes both their banner and their main faction in really positive ways. So I expect to see probably more Night's Watch.
I like that attachment on Tywin Lannister an awful lot.
Damn it, Aaron! I was just going there.
Protection from Tyeen and protection from Nymeria, and that the other attachment plus stealth on Tywin. What?
And it's really
pretty baller.
Greyjoy nonsense. Is it unique?
It is unique.
It is unique.
At least there's that, thank goodness, because it is only one Raven he has. But yeah, this is a seriously good card, and people are going to underrate Forgotten Plans until ruins them a few times, and then that'll change how people play too.
Well, and I mean, to the point that you're making about this being an attachment for Tywin, I mean, some of those other cards that are available as a efficiency package for Night's Watch going to Lannister, not bad at all.
Yeah.
I think that could end up being a thing, but first and foremost, I definitely agree with you that it's going to strengthen the Night's Watch defense, and as much as I don't want that to become a dominating factor in the meta, I think that it's important that it keeps pace, and little nuggets here and there are going to be what keeps pace.
Last faction?
Tyrell.
Yeah, that's going to win a lot of tournaments.
Okay, so Tyrell does take pretty hard in this coming pack for reasons we've been talking about going on and on here. One of their very most potent cards in Margaery suddenly now be the biggest liabilities, which is a problem. I mean, I have to regroup and kind of figure out where to go from.
Tyrell has all the draw in the world, but no cards to draw.
Oof.
Nothing it wants to see. It's like the Joker, all your strength is for nothing.
Yeah, I mean, the two cards they get are fine. I'm interested to see what this new Much and More, how good or bad it is.
It's going to look great in your binder.
Probably. But, you know, people said that about the original Much and More, and... Yeah. It ended up being a pretty good card. So
it'll be a combo card, and it'll be a really good card once we get Greg's agenda.
Right.
It'll also end up seeing play in Melee.
Yeah.
And I think for general House Tyrell purposes, you mentioned the fact that, yes, they have all the draw in the world and they've started to get, you know, just enough economy to do stuff. They're getting to the point where every single card that comes out that is non-loyal becomes a Tyrell threat.
Yeah, they're the false banner or false banners.
Yes, of course. And I think that's never more apparent than when you're talking about Lannister. I mean, you can run Illyn, you can run Mountain, you can run Jaime, you can run Tyrion.
But you know who you can run? All the good
stuff, and you draw, and you have even more economy. But yes, you know you don't have Tywin. It doesn't matter. Because
the Arbor... Yes, it does.
Is the Arbor finer?
No.
The Arbor's not Tywin, but it's less fragile than Tywin.
No, yes, but it's also... And the big problem is that Tywin is not a tempo hit. Tywin is the exact opposite of a tempo hit. Tywin's an amazing tempo play.
Okay, what's your nuts draw with a Lannister main faction deck?
Tywin, one drop, and... the zero gold. Sure, that's great. But, like, we're not talking about ideal situations. An ideal situation, the Arbor is as good as Tywin, sure. Probably even better. But when the Arbor isn't an ideal situation, you've got to play it turn two or three. In, like, then you're significantly giving up a turn, and you're sacrificing a lot of the tempo you've been working in the game to build up in order to play that to have a later tempo advantage. Well, if you see Tywin on turn two or three, your response is not, shit, I have to give up tempo right now. It's, fuck yeah, I found Tywin Lannister.
True. But you're also paying 7 gold for Tywin.
Yeah,
you're not paying 7 gold for the Arbor, right?
No,
so there's scenarios. To get that card. If you don't set him up, if you don't have an optimal scenario to get him into play, he ruins an entire turn worth of economy for you.
But yes, he the benefits that he brings. Sitting there in challenges.
Yes, of course he is. But you could also end up playing the Arbor and Knight of Flowers on the same turn.
With and one plot that exists.
One plot or many other plots plus locations. It all depends on what turn you're talking about. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, if you save that King's Road for a turn, sure.
Or you have the Arbor.
If you already have the Arbor in play, you're not playing both. Like, you can't play both the same turn. That doesn't make sense. Like,
no,
you're
not playing. I agree with you. I'm not trying to say that they're being played the same turn. I'm saying that you could afford a 3 cost because of the Arbor. So some of those other locations like your Mander, etc., become much more playable cards than they ordinarily would be.
See, I think they almost become less playable. Like, it's extremely hard to afford the tempo hit of playing all those locations at once.
I agree with Aaron in this important sense. The ruling that you can't dupe the Arbor without eating your limited spot is a huge nerf.
Yeah, that hurts a lot.
Arbor. Because the worst matchup with the Arbor, like the Arbor, I think, is a perfectly fine card against every faction but Greyjoy. And you're going to run into Greyjoy in the Swiss at a tournament.
Well, we did just talk about how much was hammered, which I think is probably a boon to the Arbor.
No joke. And that there's only one Greyjoy in the cut on average as it is.
Right, yeah, but you're playing Tyrell. There's usually zero Tyrell in the cut.
I agree with Aaron, but I don't fear the cut. Like, I think if Tyrell's biggest problem right now, though, is getting to the cut, because it can run into things like Greyjoy, which in many ways is just auto loss. And then, you know, because you're going to run into 2 or 3 Greyjoy players, and in many ways, right now, what a lot of decks do is, unless you're playing a really skilled Greyjoy player, you're taking wins off Greyjoy, and particularly in the first couple of rounds. And, like, good players and good decks can just take wins off Greyjoy. And Tyrell can't do that. In many ways, within a tournament meta, is one of the problems that Tyrell has. Like, Tyrell can... Like, Tommy, you've laid out really well, like, some of the ways in which the Arbor rounds out bad matchups for a Tyrell deck, but it doesn't for Greyjoy, which is a huge problem in Swiss. In the cut, it's not a problem, but you've got to get to that cut first. And in many ways...
So as long as you can mitigate with your plots and find a way to navigate yourself through those first 2 rounds where you're playing against the bottom feeders, you're going to be great.
No, you're not going to be great. It's ridiculous. You're not beating top Lannister unless you're lucky with Tyrell, and you're probably not beating top Stark.
Stark Tyrell is a fun matchup. It
I've been trolling Tyrell's face with Stark.
I agree. I have also generally beaten Tyrell with Stark.
Everything Stark does is better. They have strength boost, cancel. They have renown. Like, they're just better at all the things Tyrell wants to be good at, except for that one location. And I'd just rather play high gold plots than have to build a house around one location.
I agree, but when you play Tyrell as Stark, it's a matchup that doesn't just depend on, oh, when do they see their removal? There's a lot of like things that go on in the match beyond just a race to who gets to put the sword off, who gets the Tears of Riss, or do I have to cancel or save? And that to me is much more interesting because I've just played so many matchups as Stark that are just about, you know, you outracing them with your removal or them outracing you with their removal and you trying to counter with saves or cancel.
You really need to start fucking playing Winterfell.
That is a great point.
Like, because you're like, oh man, I'm racing for their removal. I'm like, no, you shouldn't be. They should never, ever be able to get a put to the sword off against you unless they
have
no turn.
Probably just.
I'm not worried about them.
Yeah. Yeah. You should run Winterfell. But like, I've been, yeah, Winterfell rolls Tyrell.
Winterfell rolls a lot of stuff.
Yeah, but. Yeah, Tyrell is really hurt.
Kurt's boss.
Like, what do you do? What? How do you stand Randall with Winterfell on the board?
You yeah, don't. You
Marjorie out of challenge, but like, then he's just going to be sitting there as a six drain. I don't know. It's just, it's extraordinarily limiting. Knight of Flowers is much more likely to lose a challenge with that plus one strength.
It becomes very awkward when you sit there and they try and look at the board and evaluate what they want to do. It becomes a really awkward silence and them turning their head from one side to the other. I'm not sure which one.
The first couple of times I played that Stark kick against Patrick, like round three, he went, I can't get a challenge through. I can't do anything. Like, I can win a challenge that won't matter. And I was like, yeah, that's kind of the point of the Stark deck right now.
Right, that's like, the idea.
Right, but like, Tyrell offers, I can't think of a single thing Tyrell offers to get around that.
I think in, not just exclusive to the Tyrell deck, I'm gonna say right now that for the remainder of regionals and potentially the Origins National, the person that figures out the way to make plot effects matter, because there are now enough options economically, card draw-wise, initiative-wise, to do everything that you need to do without dedicating your plot decks to fulfilling those things, is gonna be the thing that changes the meta. Finding the way to make those splash effects matter like they did in 1.0. Somebody's gonna do it. Somebody's gonna find the right mix, and it's gonna change everything.
I think that mix is already discovered, and I would assume that either SoCal or DC has it.
Well, then everybody should be unawares, because it's definitely imminent if it isn't already discovered, and there's a few cards that will help you mitigate that disadvantage. So,
yeah, but none of those are Tyrell cards.
No, they are certainly not those. Great point. But either way,
that's why
start looking for them, because you're going to need them.
Props and slops. Was that what I was supposed to say?
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah,
that
so,
was the thing.
So the first
I'm not prop muting for props give, and slops, right? By the way.
You're going to be on mute for props and slops?
No, I'm not muting props and slops. Okay. Fuck that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you get background noise for props and slops.
No sound quality.
So I think the first one we have to prop is like, is Kristen, right? For agreeing to marry Will, right? That's the number one thing.
No, that's
more slop. I'm not sure.
No.
Dude,
we need to prop Kristen for nailing a man who had that epic beard like 4 days before the wedding.
True, but Will, is it true that we
have to slop Will for shaving it before the wedding, you asshole?
No, he made it so good though.
Ah, that beard was amazing.
No, it was so much more amazing once he touched it up.
This is the question that all White Book fans are really worrying about here, Will. So what was left of your beard post your wedding haircut?
A Tony Stark style Van Dyke.
Yeah, no.
Exactly. Find a picture of Robert Downey Jr. and then weep because you don't have facial hair that good.
Yeah, no.
That's pretty sexy, Will. That's pretty sexy.
Compared to the epic, unreal beard that he had before? No. He had the best live beard west of Samlin and east of California, yes.
Yeah.
You know what? He had a better beard than anyone in SoCal.
Ryan's
you told Ryan to sit down and shut up with that beard, and then you shaved it.
He needs a wheelbarrow to carry that thing.
Okay, okay, okay. Will, no offense. Like, I really liked your beard. Like, don't get me wrong. It was great. It was not Ryan's beard. Like, Ryan's beard
is. It wasn't. No, I understand.
Like, Ryan's beard is its own thing. Like,
hey, I'm on record saying right now that the majesty of one's beard is no longer about the volume. It is about the quality, and Will's quality at his wedding with that Tony Stark fucking cleanup was gold.
And we'd like to thank
anybody
you guys
for listening to another week to combat to with Westeros. That. He should be on Great Beards of Westeros. In fact, he should run the shit. That thing was amazing.
You know, I already do enough work for one show. I'm more than happy to let. I think Andreas is doing the editing for that, right?
No, no one edits Great Beards of Westeros.
That's
but they well, are I doing mean, a good job. All I'm saying is that Will's beard deserves its due.
I agree. I mean, everyone believes that the beard content is extremely high there. Like, I mean, the Great Beards is easily the top three podcasts now.
No,
right? With us, banter, and then Great Beards, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I think they balance.
Did you watch that? I don't know. You should watch that episode.
I listened to that episode.
You should watch it.
Lauren was on it, and I listen when Lauren talks.
Yeah, I agree. Lauren's great at this game.
I also read when Lauren writes.
That's where I was going. I like her article. She is very good.
So this is a prop to Lauren. Okay, we've got that.
Hey, can I prop Buzz in general?
Yeah, Buzz is great.
Yeah.
For never, ever sleeping.
Yeah, Andreas is a beast and deserves all the credit. Not only is he an amazing Thrones player and a really good friend, but he really puts the work in for the community, the international community, in a way few of us do.
If you watch Second Sons, and God, you shouldn't. If you watch Second Sons, you can watch the sunrise in his window while we podcast.
Yeah.
That's great. So what time does he actually have to get up to start the Second Sons? It's like 3-ish?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it just goes until we stop. And we're like, we should stop this. And he's like, nah, fuck it, keep going. He's nuts. Yeah.
Like when we did the Wolves of the North review, he was like, fuck it, let's just do it. And Aaron, what, changed Noah. We were entertained by his cat on his screen and then showed up. I was like, why the fuck are you guys still reviewing Cards? And that was like 2.5 hours in. So yeah.
We're gonna review Cards on that podcast next week. Live.
We are.
Wednesday at, I don't know, at 9 p.m. Eastern on at twitch.tv/agotnordic. Don't watch.
That's an interesting double entente, too, because when the sun comes up in his window, it is, in effect, the second sun of your day.
Nice.
Whoa. Wow, that wheels within wheels.
That's
all right. Well, there we go. I think we're out. Nobody can top that.
Words are like wind.
Especially when you're in the
danger zone.
Now that was a good one.
That closes another chapter in the White.
Go ahead, Aaron. You had a point.
Blame with my thing. Ignore me.
Okay. So my point would be Septa Mordain is...
Sorry. My thing is the mute button, just because that didn't sound right if you're just a listener.
Thank you for pointing that out.